Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Two with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh, my God.
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here. Second deck, walk-off home run, grand slam.
Hello and welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bases Loaded. Bases Loaded is a fantasy baseball podcast, and I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. Tonight, joined by Mike. You guys know him as SP Streamer. You can follow him on Twitter at SP Streamer. And we are actually joined by a very special guest this evening, Alex Chamberlain. Alex, welcome to the show, man. Appreciate you coming on. Tell everybody where they can find you, where your work's at, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Hi, I'm Alex. I write at Rotographs, which is the fantasy baseball portion of Fangraphs. This year I started writing at CBS Sports for their sports line content, but mostly just doing Rotographs right now. I am going to contribute to Joe Pisapia's Black Book this year, so that comes out in like January, I think. So that's cool. And you can find me on Twitter at Dolph Haldhagen, and I always say that I'm never going to spell it. So if you want to find me, you got to earn it.
You got to earn it.
You got to earn it because it's a super dumb Twitter handle. So
well, it's okay because what I do to help everybody else out on the actual, like, I usually put your name in the title and I usually put your Twitter handle so people can actually see it on iTunes. On
all right.
I make it very friendly for people who, you know, want to follow our.
Not, sure.
Yeah, but before you came on, Alex, Mike asked me too. He's like, do you know how to pronounce his Twitter? I said, I have no idea.
Yeah. Dolph Haldhagen.
Yeah. I've heard you say it before on other podcasts, but it's a tongue twister for me. So this is episode 53, and a lot of it's just going to be talking about some of your work. And eventually the idea is to talk about a few players you like, dislike for this upcoming season. But honestly, I completely forgot until Mike mentioned it as well that you actually, among all the other things you mentioned that you're doing this offseason and have been doing, you also spoke at First Pitch Arizona. Is that your first time doing that? Or, like, is that something you do annually now? Like, I didn't realize it.
Yeah. It's kind of become an annual thing. I mean, I, you know, 2 years in a row, I guess that counts as annual.
I'd say so.
Let me think. So I've been going for 3 years. My first year I was on a panel. So like I went to, they used to have these satellite First Pitch Arizona meetings in the spring. So like LA or not LA, but like Long Beach, who knows where else, all over the place. I am originally from Southern California. So I made it to the Long Beach one, I guess ahead of the 2016 season or the 2017 season, 2016, I think. I mean, I'd only been writing for like a year. And I just went and I introduced myself to Brent Hershey, who's like he's kind of some editor. He's an editor of like the baseball forecaster for Baseball HQ. And so I introduced myself to him and he reached out 3 years ago and asked me if I wanted to be on a panel, and I was like, hell yeah, that'd be awesome. Pardon my French. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the H word. And So that was cool. And then the next year came around, next year being 2018, and Brent like reached out to everyone for like presentation and panel ideas, and I told him like, yo, it'd be cool if we talk about X WOBA, because that's like the big thing now with StatCast. Everyone's talking about expected WOBA, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, that's great. Make a presentation. You got 45 minutes to talk about it. So that was last
45
year.
45 minutes. Jeez.
Was that really nerve-wracking for you?
It was. It was cool. It was a little nerve-wracking because like I still didn't feel like I'd really necessarily like proven myself, you know, like I feel like I had you know, I still had to grind my teeth a little bit. Wait, grind my teeth. Is that the right idiom? Anyway, that's just like what people do in their sleep, which I still do. So it's fair. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying, but anyway, I had to like, you know, prove myself, I felt like. And so that was nerve-wracking because like I think most of those people, they're like, don't know who I am the way they know that like who Eno or like Paul Spohr or
right.
Jeff Erickson or
yeah, that's why I had to ask. I was looking at some of these names, I'm like, geez, like it's intimidating just looking at the list of names on here, you know. And the reason why I really looked into it is because I'm actually planning on going to First Pitch Florida, because that's where I live.
Okay, so yeah.
Wasn't sure if that's a part of like what you might be doing, because if so, maybe I'll see you there. But yes, I might be taking my first trip to one of these because I've always wanted to attend. And now that I've jumped into this analyst role over the last year, it's like now it's like really intriguing to me, you know what I mean? Like it's more intriguing now than ever before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's I can only imagine that if it's anything, you know, I would actually wager, I would say that it's probably going to be, I mean, they're going to have like wrinkles that they're going to need to iron out in terms of like programming and logistics and stuff. But I think like being really like within like close proximity to draft season is going to make it so much more intense than fall. And like the fall one is super good. So I'm like, I'm not discounting the fall one at all, but I think like having the whole element of like, there's going to be like ADP that we can talk about. There's going to be like all sorts of, like, you know, we're going to have like, people are already going to be signed to teams and stuff. Like there's no more guesswork involved in that, or, you know, hopefully like less guesswork involved. And there's going to be a lot more solidification of what these rosters are going to look like in people's roles and stuff like that. So I think it could be even cooler than Arizona. So with that said, I'm not going to be at Florida. I just have like way too much stuff going on. Like, it's like the first, is it in February or March?
It's literally the end of February into March 1st. So
yeah. So like first weekend of March would be First Pitch. And then second weekend of March is like a Fangraphs thing in Arizona. And then third weekend of March is Tout Wars. And, and that's in New York. So I can't go from like Florida to Arizona to New York. It's too much stuff. But like if I ever make it into labor, because like that's where the labor draft is going to be now.
Yeah, I was going to
mention that. If I ever got invited to labor, like I would obviously go. I'm not like, hopefully no one in labor is like listening to this. But if they are, like, I'm not like dying to get into labor. It'd be obviously like a huge honor to be invited. But it would be cool just to be able to do both at the same time, to be able to go to that other First Pitch. What do you call it? Conference. So
it's supposed to be the first time in Florida. So it's kind of like, it's kind of exciting that my first time gets to be like when it's an inaugural year. Like you said, there's gonna be a lot of kinks to work out, but it's gonna be interesting. And I don't know, man, this stuff has been really rewarding. How long have you been at, like, it seems like you're progressing pretty quickly. You've made a good name for yourself, and you obviously have earned the respect of your peers in quite a quick time. It seems like, how long exactly have you been doing this, and how did you get started exactly?
So I started writing at the beginning of 2015.
Jeez.
So it's been like five full seasons. I started, like, I was still in grad school and Fangraphs had an opening, like a real writer opening. And I was just like, all right, yeah, I should apply. See what happens. I went through the whole interview process. I didn't get the job. And like, frankly, like looking back on it, like I wouldn't have hired me either, which is fine. But they were like, you know, your interests are better catered to, fantasy. And like, we liked what you, like the clips that you sent us or whatever. So, you know, just took me on to the fantasy, you know, the Rotograph side of it. I've just been there ever since. So when people ask me like for advice, I always tell them that I wrote like my own terrible blog for like a year that like no one knows about. And I'm not going to like reveal how to find it here, but I did that for like a year and I got like anywhere from three to six views per post. So like really like not doing it for anyone other than myself, but like I basically practiced for a year. And then like when the time came and I applied somewhere, I had things that I could show people that like, regardless of like how many views or whatever they had, like if it was good enough quality, you know, it doesn't matter like who or where you're writing for, like they're going to want you. And I think, you know, I think they liked what they read, this, you know, despite like this being like a blog post or whatever, like what are those old like internet pages that you could make like back in like the late 90s?
Oh, and early my goodness.
Like Hot Pages or something.
It's honestly that's a little,
you know what I mean, like it's like, it wasn't Hotwire, because Hotwire anyway so it was like, you know, like a crappy blog that I wrote myself that, you know, that no one knows about, but it you know, I think it paid off. So it's not just one of those things where like just because you're good at fantasy you can write or do analysis. Like everyone has won leagues before, you know, like that doesn't really mean anything anymore.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And honestly, it's, you're kind of, what you did is not inspiring is part of it, but I don't want to just be like, oh my God, you're like this huge inspiration. Like you are obviously, you know what I mean? Like your story is very, it's inspiring to a sense, because it shows that you can, if you put the work in and you're willing to, you know, hone in on your craft, it shows that you can move relatively quick in the industry if you put in the effort. It's just, and that's kind of what I'm saying, is it kind of assimilates to what me and Mike have done. We both, Mike actually started his own website and writes his own stuff. I was fortunate enough, man, like unless like my first few months I picked up on writing. I initially got into this just wanting to podcast, you know, I just love talking. My voice is just, I love my own voice, I guess. I don't know. I just, it actually started off, it started,
you
off
definitely as a, love your own voice.
Oh yeah. I talk a lot. It actually started off as a solo pod. Like I had no real intentions or actual direction of what I wanted to do initially. And then it turned into, I started writing a little bit for like a smaller site that was just fortunate, was just happy to have me on. The guy there, it's actually the FSGN, Blake Sullivan is the guy's name. He gave me a chance to just start writing, and it turned into now I'm writing for Fantrax, and that was like way bigger than I ever anticipated getting this quick. And it's just like you said though, it's just a matter of putting yourself out there, willing to take the criticism and the trolls that come with it, and kind of go with it, man. And
especially on Reddit.
Oh dude, Reddit's a monster.
Yeah.
Twitter is way more encouraging, but
a little rough.
Yeah, I actually don't do a lot of Reddit stuff. Like I have like, if you find me on Reddit, I have like 8 posts. and like I've tried to like wade into those waters a little bit, but I just don't use Reddit normally. And I'm just not very, like, I'm like the equivalent of like an old, like, you know, like an old person finding the internet for the first time. That's me on Reddit. Like, I don't know what's going on. I don't really know how anything works or why it's working the way it works.
All I know is how to post on Reddit, and I do it for the clicks, man, because it gets me out there, it gets me some exposure. It's really, that's all I use it for, though. I don't go on there and surf it at all. That's Twitter. I'm on Twitter a lot, but
yeah,
Reddit is just to put my
life on Twitter.
don't we all?
Yeah, everyone here.
But yeah, sorry, I lost where I was at on my thing here. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I can bring it full circle though. I presented this year too on like my pitch leaderboard and like pitch type analysis. So that's two straight years of presentations and like 3 years of going and being on panels. And yeah, it's cool. I think like doing presentations like wears me out. Rewarding, but like I think next time I'm just gonna go and chill.
Yeah.
And just like kind of enjoy it. They want me to be on a panel, and that's cool too. Like the panels are super fun, and like listening to those panels and like having like Eric Carabel versus like Derek Van Riper versus Paul Sporer versus Ryan Bloomfield talking about these guys and like arguing over them is really fun. So
I saw they're doing a lot of podcasts too there.
Yeah, so there's like, I don't know, previously I think there was only one podcast night, but this time they split it into two, and they recorded at least 4 if not 5 different podcast episodes. And so like the first night and the second night, they just like carve out chunks where those podcasts get recorded, and you can just go in a room and listen to them and participate if participation is warranted. And yeah, it's super cool.
That's awesome.
And I don't know how that all works in terms of which podcasts get chosen, but obviously like sleeper in the bust, and
stuff like stuff of that sort. Yeah,
and like yeah, like the Eno and Derek, like the Barrels and Beers one, I think recorded there. So like you know, some like high profile podcasts. It's pretty cool.
So you mean tell me there's a chance that makes a little bit.
I am saying that, but I'm not. I'm in no position to make any guarantees.
So there's a chance. Yeah, we've been very fortunate, man. I mean, honestly, I'm very surprised. I mean, I'm not so surprised now that I realize it's people are so willing to be a part of. Like you were willing. Like we reached out. You were willing to come on. Super appreciative of that. We've had Gray Albright, which I was surprised. We've had Bogman. We've had some good guys come on and just be willing to donate their time. That's the best way to put it. Like we are just like, please help us. And and it's just, we just can't be more thankful. And it's been an awesome experience getting into this industry and just meeting all these people, including yourself. It's just, it's really more welcoming than I ever expected. And definitely the opposite of what I hear about football. So that's
yeah, I'm like pretty far removed from the whole football thing, but yeah, the whole, like you said earlier, like the whole community is like pretty welcoming, and everyone's super like super encouraging and pretty cool. And like, I mean, cool, like considering that we're all like dorks.
Yeah.
When you meet everyone in person, you're like, oh my God, we're all such dorks. but no, you know, like everyone's like pretty supportive, and like, you know, it's, I thought I would be embarrassed to go to First Pitch. Like I feel bad for saying that, because like exactly, I mean, it is like really like it is a pretty nerdy thing in reality. But like it's like one of my favorite days or one of my favorite weekends of the year now. So
well, I mean, I feel like the closest thing I could probably feel to what you felt was like telling my parents I do a podcast, like telling my friends and family that like this is what I do for fun now. Like this is, I write fantasy articles and I host a podcast. Like this is, I tell people that. I used to be really like you said, shamed is the wrong word, but like embarrassed is kind of the wrong word.
Embarrassed, yeah.
Embarrassing.
People don't understand it, you know. Like what?
Now,
like, what are you writing about?
But now it's like second nature. Now I tell people, and I'm almost proud of it, because I've realized so quickly. I feel like I've accomplished a lot compared to what I like expected to, and I'm seeing that there's still growth to be had, and still like, you know, a bright future ahead, at least in my opinion, as I see myself very confident, and I'm just, I have high goals and expectations for myself. So with that said, it's like it's turned into a thing I'm proud to say I do, which is weird, because at first, like you said, it's like it's super embarrassing and nerdy, but I mean, these days being a nerd is a cool thing, man. Like we win. But you mentioned your charts before. I kind of want to transition to that. Now, Mike, other Mike, I should say, you've been dying to talk to him about his charts. You love his charts.
I use it every day.
He's super into the, obviously, streaming pitchers and pitchers in general. He's kind of that guy for us. So, Mike, here's your chance, man. Ask away. Because I'm still trying to figure that damn thing out. I won't even lie. Like,
sorry.
It's not that complicated.
It's like, there's a lot happening, though. Like, if you go to it for the first time, it's like,
oh, yeah. It definitely took me several, you know, times going to it to get it down a little bit.
Well,
yeah. I feel like even now I still find stuff out that I didn't even know was on.
And I'm also self-admitted that I'm really good at breaking down a hitter. I'm really good at looking into hitters and offense and finding sleepers and finding like possible breakouts. I've found that that's my strength. Pitching is not yet. Pitching I'm okay at. I'm good, but not nearly where I need to be. So when I went to your, I understand the stats, I understand the metrics, but when I look at your chart, it's just something I have to get comfortable playing on. And I just, but again, I'll stop talking now. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead, Woody. Go ahead. Well, you've been dying for this, man.
No. Well, my first main question is, I wanted to know what caused you to think of this and to start it, essentially.
Yeah. So there's a few kind of different, impetuses. Reasons. Here. So like on Baseball Prospectus, they have a pitch leaderboard, essentially. But it's not very good. And it's like super slow, and like the way the stats are organized are not very friendly. But like that was one of the first things that I used when I realized that like pitch type analysis might be important. And obviously like I knew it was important. I've used things like Brooks Baseball, you know, for a while. So it's not like I didn't know how to analyze pitches and why I should be analyzing individual pitches. But I just like, I kind of knew intuitively that like, I would be a lot better if I knew like what the average four seamer looked like, or what the average slider looked like, etc. And so like the first version of this was actually not even a leaderboard. It was kind of like, it's kind of like a chart, like a scatter plot or a scatter plot, excuse me, that you could like pick different variables and have the pitches plot on the scatter plot. So you could pick like x-axis is swinging strike rate, and y-axis is ground ball rate. And so like the farther up in the right hand corner it is, it would be like that pitch has a really high ground ball rate and a really high swinging strike rate. And that's when I like started to like kind of hone in on like, whoa, this guy is really good because he has these two really good pitches, and like kind of understanding like really how good those pitches are compared to everything else, like really like finally kind of understanding the context of everything. And I kick myself because like I had known prior to Blake Snell's breakout that he had two really good breaking balls. And I was like, but the command sucks. Maybe it's a small sample thing. Just didn't really think twice about it. But like, you know, it's one of those things where like you can do this kind of analysis and you can see the leading indicators of like why that happened, you know, like you can go back and it's not just like it happened overnight. Like Blake Snell had the stuff, and like it wasn't like he wasn't a prospect or anything, but you know, like it wasn't random either. Yeah, so anyway, right. I hadn't like, not until before last off season, I had like no Statcast experience really. Like I had been really daunted by digging into it because it's so vast.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Terrifyingly big and complicated. And like I'm a data guy, you know, but it was like one of those things where like I was like so overwhelmed by it that I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But I knew that like that's where the edge is like people using Statcast. So and I knew that it had like a bunch of pitch information. So one day I just like wrote a script. I yanked all that data off of Statcast.
So do you have like a background in programming or?
Yeah, I have a master's in economics. And so like, I know some coding. I do some coding at work.
There you go.
So I'm predisposed to this kind of stuff, but So I wanted to like replicate like what the pitch leaderboard was for Baseball Prospectus, but not load so slowly, and to use the new Statcast data. And basically I just like took all those different inspirations, like modeled it kind of after the Fangraphs leaderboards. You know, that's kind of the end of it. It's been tweaked like a whole bunch since last off season, but I'm finally like honing in on something that I like. Like on the right side right now, there's a bunch of filters for all the metrics, and I'm going to get rid of those because like no one uses them. I don't use them. Rob Silver is like the guy I first talked to about making this. He's, you know, he does the launch angle podcast on Fantrax, and even he doesn't use those filters. So like it's just a matter of like paring down and getting the essentials in there. And
I have to say, I never use those filters on the right either.
Cool. See, that's the feedback that I need. Like I don't use them either, and I'm the one who put them there. So I think I'm gonna get rid of them. Yeah. Just kind of simplify things so it's not so like right, because like you said, like it can be like kind of daunting, and like I'm not a user interface person. Like I don't know anything about this stuff. I just made it. You know, I'm a guy who made the thing. So you know that kind of feedback is good to have. So hopefully it'll be a little simpler going forward. I'm going to be adding some deserved metrics and stuff on there.
That'd be awesome.
I have like a test version of the leaderboard that a few people have links to that has like an expected strikeout rate and expected walk rate on there right now. So I'm kind of like dabbling with that kind of stuff. So
I have one thing. I don't know if you ever thought about it. So when you go to different pitch types, so when you don't, when you go to the overall like outcomes and specs, like you can sort, you have the starts, like you could adjust how many starts, this way you could eliminate relievers. Are you going to add something for the pitches to do that? So like when I'm looking at different pitches, if I just want to compare starters or relievers, I have to kind of, you know what I mean, like kind of just eliminate them with my eyes, you know what I mean?
Yeah that's definitely doable, and I should actually write that down. It'll take some work. But I can probably get it to.
Yeah, that would be like out. The only critique I could think of, because whenever I look and I'm trying to compare starters, and I'm like looking at who's like the top five ex-Wobo with like four seamers, but then it's hard. I got to try and like eliminate relievers, especially if I'm looking at like only like a 3 month sample. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like I know exactly what I have to do, but I'm too lazy to do it.
Yeah.
But it's like the off season. I'm feeling inspired. Like I've already started to like overhaul some things. So yeah, that's like one of the things that I can probably implement.
I mean, I've always wanted
to do that. Yeah, I've wanted to get the starting pitcher, like just a simple like SP versus RP filter. That'd be ideal.
That'd be awesome.
Just like not have to tell people like, yeah, just set it to one game started. That's the easiest way. But then you get guys like Chad Green in there too. So it's it's not perfect.
Right. With the openers being a thing now, yeah.
Yeah, kind of ruins it.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was just going to ask, so when the 2020 season starts, is it going to be a whole new table? Will this just update automatically?
It's going to update automatically. Well, semi-automatically. Uh-huh. I mean, it doesn't run like when my computer is closed. Like it has to run when my computer's open, just because of the way that Tableau works. Like it pushes that data manually kind of. And I'm not smart enough. Like there's a way to probably to automate it, but I'm not smart enough to do that. So gotcha. It kind of like is based on my work week. And it's like, if I'm on the computer, it'll push. And if I'm on vacation, y'all have to wait. So, the layout is going to stay the same, generally speaking. I'm just getting rid of getting rid of some clutter.
Now, are you getting a lot of people using this? Like, can you see how many users are checking it?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. I have the pitch leaderboard has 17,000 views right now. And like that, that was before, like I actually had to make a new link. And so I lost the very first day that I presented it. I think I got like 8,000 views. So it's probably like total for the year at like 25,000 with like literally a third of it happening on the first like 3 days of it being available.
And another third probably being Mike over here.
I didn't see it until like the end of the season. Somehow I never saw it, heard of it or anything. And
living
it's
under
definitely
a rock.
It made my life a lot easier.
Yeah, low now, key, like I mean I use it a lot. Like I try, like I'm embarrassed to pimp it. But at the same time, like I made it for a reason. And, you know, there's like it has a lot of functionality that I just can't find like literally anywhere else.
Yeah, definitely.
So I use it all the time. I use the split finder probably most often because I can just hone in on a specific guy and it just has all his pitches there, and you can look like year to year or month to month. Like that is my favorite tool. And I didn't even think, like I made that as an afterthought. I was like, oh, this will be probably helpful. And it's like
the splits is awesome. Plus you could see how their pitches progress throughout the year.
Right.
Did you mention, I thought I've heard mention of a hitter chart potentially in the works too?
Yeah, it's made technically, but I just have to unveil it. I basically, all I did was like, I mean, I'm using all the same data, and basically all the same stats. I mean, obviously the pitch, like FIP and XFIP are not going to show up for hitters. Like I'm going to have the same version for hitters where it's like, this is how Mike Trout batted against sliders.
That's awesome.
In 2019. And then also like the overall thing too. So like, this is how Mike Trout, you know, batted for the season. And then you can break down like each pitch type, you can do it by date, etc. Like
when do you think you're going to release that?
I have some things that I still need to, I have some updates that I'd like to make. And we're not like too far into draft season and prep season yet.
Right.
So I'll probably wait until like 2020.
You can't rush like perfection, man.
Yeah. I'm just wondering.
I gotta make sure that like I am not, you know, like last off season I spent a lot of time on this, and then I just like, and I did not prepare well enough last year. And it's one of those things where like I just need to make sure that I, you know, spend time on me first. I need my me time, and then refine this one. So, I wanna try to have it ready by like no later than the beginning of February, and then
everyone has
a good couple of months with it.
Yeah, well, that'd be perfect.
And I'm a big hitter guy, so I bet you I'll be able to pick up that chart a lot easier than the pitcher one. But I really do, honestly, because I've not only obviously do you swear by it as the creator, and like you said, you don't mean to pimp it, but Mike's done nothing but talk well about it, and I've heard other people really speak well of it, and it's definitely on, literally, I have a list of to-dos because I have a lot of stuff going on this offseason, and part of my to-do list is to learn how to use your table, because I've just heard of how useful it really is for analysis purposes. So
And I looked at it a little bit today. So like 15 views are probably for me today and yesterday. just dabble, just playing with it, because the best way to learn, just like anything else, just like any other website or anything else, is just to get in there and kind of
play around.
And next thing you know, I'm on a screen. It's not loading. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I broke it.
Yeah. My one thing that I don't like about Tableau is that if you leave it sitting there for too long, it'll just reset.
Resets,
and it's like, and then you can't download anything.
But hey, man,
awesome. If you could download a spreadsheet, that would be holy smokes, that'd be the best part of
the whole thing.
Awesome. But it's as good as it can reasonably for one dude in his office. So
you're doing God's work, man. It's really, in all seriousness, though, it's a lot of work. Well, it's I would say, but it's a lot of work, and trust me, it doesn't. I mean, at least on our end, it doesn't go unnoticed, because we're putting out, we put out basic material in comparison, and even that material takes time and effort, because just the editing process, all that. I couldn't imagine actually running. Mike and I kind of do something, but on a far smaller scale. We put out daily charts. He does a pitcher one, I do a hitter one, and but it's a far smaller scale, obviously, and it's different, but we get the idea, and we can understand the amount of work and effort that goes into it. And I mean, I know you probably don't get enough thanks for it, but
trust me, I do.
That's
I do.
Good.
No, that's good.
No, it's good. People
are pretty happy about it, and I'm happy that people are happy. It would have been cool if one person liked it, and it's awesome that so many people have.
You need to get it sponsored.
Have you ever thought about bringing it to Rotographs and seeing if they're interested on putting it on Fangraphs or anything?
I did bring it to Fangraphs. I was like, yo, this is what I'm working on. And David Appleman is the guy who runs Fangraphs. And he was like, wow, this is really cool. Wow. Yeah. Wow. I don't want it. And I was like,
really?
Oh, cool. And it's I totally get it. I mean, it was there's a very specific style at Fangraphs.
Gotcha.
And all their data is on a server somewhere, and this is he would have to trust me to just have my data on my
external
hard drive kind of thing. So it just logistically wasn't gonna work. But I think
I feel someone will pick it up eventually, maybe.
Someone, right? I can say with very certain terms that someone will have something like this soon.
Ooh.
And that's all I will say.
Won't be yours.
It won't be mine. Although I have been approached about this specific one, and someone else maybe might pick it up also, the specific one. And that's all I'll say about that also.
I kind of have a feeling that one of them is pitcherless. Just saying.
I can't say.
Just saying.
Obviously, you don't sound peeved by any means, because if you were
No, I'm not. Well,
because if you were, it sounds like the way you made it sound is someone's taking your idea and running with it on their own thing, instead of just, it's almost like taking it and making it theirs instead of giving you the credit for doing all the work.
It's cool. I'm actually involved with the one that I know of that's going to happen.
That you know of.
Baseball Prospectus technically, I stole that idea from Baseball Prospectus technically.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
I didn't do anything. This isn't, to me, this was the next logical step. So it's not like it was... Right. This isn't some proprietary thing. The whole point is to just, this is publicly available data, just summarized in a really super nifty way.
You just put it all one place for people to.
Yeah. And I think I had a good year of it being the place to go. And I think I've inspired some pretty, important baseball people. And that's a pretty cool thing, I don't need more than that. Although someone wants to pay me tens of thousands of dollars, that's cool too. But in the meantime, the recognition, just for on the basis of pride, that's it's a cool thing. So
maybe if somebody could pay you and then take your name and put as seen on Alex Chamberlain's Tableau.
Yeah. in 8-point font in the bottom right, thanks, Alex.
Well, yeah, with a little asterisk, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of metrics, obviously you're really into them. I just want to talk about you a little bit. We talked a little off air, a little bit on Twitter about your expected barrels. You were mentioning that you're still working on things. What exactly, first off, what are you trying to accomplish with it? What are you trying to really figure out and what seems to be the kinks you're working on, if you don't mind kind of all encompassing that in one
question. I'll try to articulate it the best I can because it's one of those things where it's like, it's actually probably a lot easier for me to talk about it than it is to write about it.
Perfect.
So let's give this a shot. So like the whole deserve barrel thing is like, you know, a barrel. So let's define a barrel. Like a barrel is a specific combination of exit velocity and launch angle.
Right.
And so those are all based on like, these combinations are based on just like observed outcomes that the guys at StatCast, like the guys at StatCast have seen like these specific combinations have produced high quality outcomes. So they kind of just like slapped the barrel label on it. So,
I got the actual definition right here if you'd like.
It's not that helpful because it's like kind of like, it's like a black box a little bit, but if you like dig into the data, like you can figure out exactly like what the equation is. So like, you know, if the basic building blocks of a barrel are exit velocity and launch angle, then my hypothesis was that if you take someone's average exit velocity and someone's average launch angle, you can probably predict, or at least like not predict, but at least estimate what their deserved barrel rate should have been. And there's kind of like some underlying assumptions about control, like hitter talent. And what I mean by that is like, I kind of assume that everyone has small control over how hard they've hit the ball all the time. And they have small control over like what angle they hit the ball at. And that's like, you know, I mean, that's why guys have different launch angles and exit velocities. Like if they didn't have some kind of control or natural talent, like everyone would just be the same at all times. And there would be no just differentiation between everyone. So there's kind of like this acknowledgement that people have, or the hitters have, some natural talent that lends itself to like hitting within specific ranges of exit velocity and launch angle, but not that much control over it, such that like, because there's so little control over these certain properties of hitting, that like you could just take the averages and be good enough is kind of like the premise of that. And it's now I'm finding that it is kind of difficult to explain, but I think you get what I mean. Like hitting, you know, guys succeed only 25-30% of the time. You know, guys hit, drive the ball straight into the ground, they pop it up. It's not like if they had perfect control over their launch angle or their exit velocity, they would be batting 1,000 with like 100 home runs.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of one of those things where you're just kind of like, you're using your intuition to kind of explain like, well, yeah, like these guys are good, but like there's so much luck involved. And so like, I just wanted to see like how well exit velocity and launch angle explained barrels. And obviously because they're like the two building blocks for it, they explained it really well. And like, I was looking at some of the examples of some of the guys at the outliers, like just looking at my data and seeing like, you know, Aaron Judge in 2017, like outperformed his deserved barrel rate, you know, when he hit 52 home runs, and then the next year, like came back down to earth. Matt Chapman in 2018 was like way under his deserved barrel rate, hit 24 home runs. And then in 2019, like basically played to what his deserved barrel rate was, and like had the true power outburst that we could have seen, like we could have expected it had we known that, had we like looked at his deserved barrel rate or whatever and seen that he had underperformed by such a big margin in 2018. So I think that there's some value to it. I'd like to think that there's value to it, and it has like a really high correlation with real barrels, etc. So like, it's not like it's bad. But I was looking at the predictive value of it. So like, does deserved barrels in 2018 better predict barrels in 2019 than just regular barrel rate? So like, if I wanted to know what someone's barrel rate in 2019 was, would I want to use 2018's barrel rate or 2018's deserved barrel rate? And I found out that you just want to use the regular barrel rate. I was like, that kind of sucks, because like the whole point was that like you're kind of weeding out the noise. And I don't think that the equation, the way that it's set now, is good enough to do that. But it's also interesting to know that like that barrel rate's pretty sticky from year to year. Like, if a guy has a glow up in barrel rate, you can probably expect that it'll stick. It's just one of those things where it's like, the flip side of that coin is like, well, maybe he got lucky and the 2018 barrel rate should have stuck. So, like, it's hard to know which one you should believe, whether someone's barrel rate goes up or down. And I guess it's in the eye of the beholder. Ultimately, you know, I think deserved barrels is still really good, like at the outliers, the extreme outliers. So the guys who overperformed like a really big margin or underperformed by a really big margin. So like the Aaron Judge in 2017, the Matt Chapman in 2018, and then potentially like the Pete Alonso in 2019, who had like a 20% weight, like a 15% barrel rate, and his deserved barrels was only like 10% because he doesn't actually have like that high of an average exit velocity for being like a huge power guy. So that'll be interesting to see if that actually plays out the way that I'm expecting it to, which is that he isn't necessarily like a true 50 homer guy. He's more like a 35 homer guy. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how that's validated, but I think kind of the crux of what I'm getting at here is like, having learned that about the model, like I'm less inclined to like look at small differences and really just want to use it only for like the really big outliers. I think that's like the safest way to instruct people how to use it. And that's like, I think that's probably reasonable for most models like that. Like any kind of like expected BABIP or whatever, like there's going to be guys who outperform and they do it like, you know, all the time. Like there's just guys who always outperform their ex BABIP. Yeah. Mondesi. Yeah. The guys in ex WOBA, like, you know exactly how certain guys are going to overperform or underperform because they're like slow or they're fast or they're pull heavy or whatever. Right. So like there's always going to be different guys who do that. And I think that always, you know, that certainly applies to the deserved barrels as well. Deserved barrels as well. Just the biggest outliers is like what I would hope people, if they're listening, to focus on. And then one day I'll tighten things up and maybe it'll be more predictive than regular barrel rate. That would be awesome. I'm just not sure it will get to that point.
Did you try and see if it was more predictive over like 3 or 4 years instead of just
one
year to another?
I used I used all StatCast data. So like 2015 onto 2016, 2016 onto 2017, et cetera.
And it was still just the big outliers that kind of.
I think so. I think so. And I also look to see like if guys, like if there's a relationship with the guys who overperform in 1 year, do they do that again the next year? And there is a relationship there. So yeah, it's interesting. I'm not totally surprised. I guess I'm a little disappointed. But
yeah, you sound a little beat up by it. Like, you sound a little frustrated.
I just wish that I feel dumb for not looking at it sooner. But at the same time, again, like I think there's value there. It's not like I just like, oh, this thing isn't helpful anymore. Like I think just in certain, like you just looking at certain data points, like this is cherry picking and people might discourage that. But like, again, looking at the Aaron Judge and the Matt Chapman and everyone like that, like you can find where it's valuable, but those are the guys at the extreme. So that's where I would recommend people looking if they're doing any off-season research.
I was going to say, sounds like an article you could throw together.
perhaps a few
names over and under achievers. Mm-hmm. You can break it up into two articles. Look at that. Just saying, I may be interested in that, but I'm glad you brought up Alonso because I have an ongoing feud with like half this podcast. No, because Alonso early ADP was like ridiculous. He was going like second round, like early to mid, like mid second round sometimes, and now he's, you know, falling back into the 30s range, but he was an early bust for me because of that ADP, because I'm big on value and there was no value to be had there. And now if he is closer to a 35 home run guy, but like a 250, 260 hitter, that still doesn't really justify being taken in the early 30s. So what are your thoughts on him at this point?
I agree. Yes. I mean, like, let's just talk about like odds, like just the probability aspect of it. Like he just did something like literally historic. It's like a top 1% outcome. So like to expect that he performs at a level that's better than elite consistently is probably pretty foolish. The same way that like we were foolish to expect that from Aaron Judge, even though it looked like totally legit. Like you watch it, like it passes the eye test. It even to a certain extent like passes the stats test. But like I think just intuitively, like You know it's going to come back. Even if the ball is still like as juiced as it was, like it just is unreasonable to expect 50, even 45. Like I think 40 is interesting. I'm probably going to expect closer to 35. And if he's not hitting for average, which he doesn't, then there is like a slight problem there. But he could prove me wrong and I'm open to that, but I'm probably not going to have any of him on any of my teams. You can get, the thing is like, you can just get so much power anywhere else. You know, like Edwin Encarnacion, as if you're doing early drafts right now and you can get Edwin in the 15th or like 18th round.
Yeah. His ADP,
like, he'll hit 35 home runs, you know, like even though he's old, yeah. He'll hit like 230 or 240. He'll give you legit power and you know that's bankable. And there's like really, you know, his profile is pretty stable too. So it's just one of those things where it's like, I'm not gonna expose myself to that risk, I think, so early on where I can get bankable power later, but I'm not gonna like fault anyone for chasing that 50 homer upside again. It's just not me.
Yeah. I'm gonna take Matt Olson 30 to 40 picks later every
time.
Oh,
I love Olson.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's going Olsen's, in a good spot, too.
Well, he will be for now. You have to get him early because he's going to creep up. He's going to be like a big riser come like February, March, man. It's going to drive me nuts. But yeah. So you mentioned the eye test, and this kind of falls into just, you're a numbers guy. We've all kind of, I think what bothers me is not enough people, like you still have a lot of people that don't want to buy into him at all. I think it's foolish. I feel like the metrics, so like they're somewhat the answers to a test. You pretty much have your study guide, but there's still an eye test. Like how much do you put more weight? Do you put a lot of weight into the metrics? And obviously the eye test still matters, but like how much, like are there times where the metrics even like you just won't buy into them because you watch the player play a certain way and vice versa? Like sometimes a player's underperforming, you see that they should be doing better, but the metrics don't necessarily back it up. Like, what's your relationship with metrics? How much do you depend on them? Are you really obviously you're heavy into the analytics, but
yeah, I'm pretty heavily dependent. And I think it's more of a one-way street where I will use metrics to kind of not discourage, but to kind of like break down biases that I have from using the eye test. Like I think we develop biases more easily by using the eye test. You know, just like looking at him and, you know, you see Pete Alonso's home runs and they're like, they're no doubters. And you're like, I mean, they say what you want about the metrics, but like this dude friggin' crushes balls. you know, there's really no question about it, but that's like exactly when you want to use metrics to kind of like reel yourself back in. Whereas like the eye test doesn't really do that for me. Like I don't like look at a guy and I'm like, oh yeah, like screw the metrics. Like this guy is going to come out of it. But like, I will look into things like based on things that I see, but I know that like when I'm using the eye test, so to speak, it's always a small sample. And anything can change like over an inning or over a game or over a week, et cetera. So, yeah, like I said, more of a one-way street for me. I do like depend on it, but the metrics definitely weigh more. And I think, you know, the biggest thing metrics can do is you just have to be able to interpret them the right way so that they are revealing to you, the same way that like you can't just see that someone's ex WOBA is way higher than his regular WOBA and assume that he's going to regress, or to see like, you know, this guy has a 350 BABIP, he's going to regress to 300. Like those rules of thumb, like they don't exist anymore, frankly. Like, I feel like that was a thing, and I think that was real. I want to say that was real for a long time, and there is a lot of merit to it, but this new crop of, like, young hitters, they're so different, and the tools are so loud. Like, everyone is super aggressive, and everyone, like, swings out of their ass. Mm-hmm. They strike out like crazy. They don't walk, and they put, like, they have mad contact quality. And it's just like the game, like the projection systems aren't, and all the metrics, like just, they aren't ready for it. It's interesting. So I think, and like, it's only going to keep going like that, you know, the Acuñas and the Tatises and the Baezes and the Hiuras, and like it's just going to keep going like this. Like, I think especially because pitchers are beginning to become more adept at crafting pitches and like optimizing their arsenals. Like, it's just kind of the natural progression of the game is like hitters aren't are going to become less contact oriented, and they're going to start selling out for power. And we're seeing it, like, I think it's only the tip of the iceberg right now, but we're seeing like some pretty prominent examples from like the 22, 23, 24 year olds that are dominating the game right now.
Yeah. Definitely.
That was a tangent, but yeah.
No, it's fine. Because well, I'm curious, because it sounds like you're intrigued at the same time, kind of like the way you presented it was like you're intrigued by these new wave of hitters, but at the same time, you're kind of like skeptical. Where's Acuña for you? First, second, or third overall?
I think, well, I just wrote, I just wrote about this for the Black Book, and I actually can't remember who I put first. And
for me, it changes daily.
I think I put Acuña. And let me just go to Christian Yelich's what's it called page real quick. Christian Yelich. So, you know, I think it's fair to his Fangraphs page. Sorry, I probably never said that out loud. You know, I think it's fair to prioritize Acuña. He's younger. He ran like crazy at the end, and I think people want to speculate on that kind of pace, kind of sustaining through 2020. Like, if you can happen to capture like a 60 steal pace or whatever in 2020, you want to be able to do that. And I think Yelich is probably a safer bet, but I like the idea of Acuña going one. And like, I did this mock draft in my head, and it was like Acuña 1, Tatis 24, Starling Marte 25. And so it was just like,
wow.
It was like 100 steals and stolen bases, like right off the bat, you know? Yeah. And I was like, that is fun. That is super, super fun. And like, I feel like, you know, I was one of the guys who was like off of Tatis this preseason, because his projection was down, and like, I'm definitely the guy who hedges bets. Like, there's a lot of guys who have been like Tatis in the minors before. From a stats standpoint, there's a high probability that he's not going to be so good that he's going to blow my pants off, but you know, I took that risk and I was wrong, and I'm willing to wear that because like, I'm just playing the odds. But obviously, like, the guys who drafted Tatis and could hold him and then use him, they profited like really handsomely.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, you know, even if the power isn't real, which I don't know if he's going to be, like, if he's going to come even close to that same power pace, he's got the steals kind of, like, foundation. So, like, even if he busts, he can be, like, a 15, 30, 250 guy, and that's going to be really good because no one runs anymore. So
like a Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, a
little
bit,
like, without
the
plate discipline, though.
Yeah, like, the exact, like, the on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms, like, of plate discipline and contact, but like, yeah, getting to the same place effectively. But anyway, I went off the rails a little bit. I think Acuña would be cool, and I think there's just the promise of him being like, what, 23 or whatever, that there's going to be a little more upside there, but you really can't go wrong with either one. I would take both of them over Trout, though. Like, I think people like scoff a little bit, like, you know, Trout's the best player in the game, and I think Trout has the highest floor, absolutely the highest floor, but he's not gonna steal 30 or 40 bases, and that's,
I don't think so either.
It's huge. It's huge. So I think I'm actually very okay with Trout being a consensus three.
I'm okay with anyone, but, you take know. I want to pick third in every draft this year.
Yeah, and just take whoever's there. Yeah,
exactly. Every time, yeah. If I can pick third, or I do love auctions. So whichever one, like, I'm big on stud dud because a lot of my auctions are home leagues with 12 teams. Mm-hmm. So whichever one of those three go cheapest, if I have a chance to figure that one out, I'm going to take them. Like, I want to have one of those three on my team because they're all great foundation pieces. I understand Trout's – I'm worried about Trout, too, because it was at three straight years of 140 games or less. Two out of those 3 years, I think he had injuries, one being, like, the thumb, the foot now. And I don't know Joe Maddon. I haven't looked into Joe Maddon's teams as far as, like, stolen bases. It's like, isn't he, like, middle of the pack? I could be wrong, but I know Joe Maddon as a manager is there now. And
I don't know. A lot of changing parts. I'm just not going to, like – I'm just not going to expect stolen bases, you know, like, yeah. I'm not going to draft Trout, yeah, and be like, yeah, he's getting 30. Like, I'm drafting him for 45, 10, 320. And it is what beautiful. It is. Like, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. But like, yeah, I'm for auction. I'm totally studs, duds too. And I think I'm super into drafting third because you're going to be locked into the best three, no matter what. I'm actually kind of like scared of fourth.
Because
a foregone conclusion that it's going to be like Mookie Betts or Cody Bellinger, and I think both are okay, but like
I like Lindor.
Rather just wait at that point. I'd rather, if I don't get third, I'd rather just wait until like.
I'd rather be at the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, as the draft goes on, what you have, like you have Lindor who falls sometimes, you have Soto who falls, Arenado really falls, Rendon.
Yeah, it's
like
the lowest for him probably this year for Arenado.
Which is crazy.
Like top five for like forever.
Because he doesn't steal, and there's just such a need for steals because second round is littered with Freddie Freeman. Rendon goes late first, early second. You have like those types of guys with the same skill set, a little lower of a floor, but still very high floors in all those the same four categories. So
right.
It's easier to fill that versus everyone's prioritizing speed. So it's just going to be a good value. He might be somebody that people look back on and think, why didn't I take him for $10 more? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, that's again, we're good. We're getting good on tangents right now. I don't want to keep you too long. I appreciate you hanging out with us for a little bit, but lastly, I want to hear about your general approach to evaluating players, I guess, like as off season goes along and how you find guys you like and don't like.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish that I had like a really concrete system because last year it really showed that like I wasn't disciplined or diligent enough to like look into everyone. I think one of the things that I tell people in addition to like my writing advice is the least you can do for yourself is to make yourself familiar with the entire player pool. And that's really dramatic, but like you definitely want to know like pretty intimately, like the first few dozen to 100 or 150 picks or whatever. Like you don't want to build the core of your team by throwing darts. So like the least you can do is to like just go to each guy's page and to form some kind of opinion, even if it's not like a very well thought out opinion. Like to just go to his page and know what he can do and like whether you've like strongly considered if it's sustainable or not. Like at least you know what his production looked like. Etc. And I would strongly recommend doing more than what I just recommended, but you know, at least do that. When I write for these publications, like I'm doing captions right now, like that's really helpful.
Because it forces you
to like synthesize an argument for or against someone. And it's probably my favorite thing to do in the off season. And like the guys that I write captions for, I have the most clarity about, and like I've made like really, really good picks in the past few years, and they've been the guys that I've like done deep dives on. So like in a perfect world, if I had 70 hours in a day, I would just write I'd write a caption for everyone.
Yeah, everyone.
Or like the first 150 guys or whatever, you know. So with that in mind, like I try to do a deep dive, and you know my analysis type isn't or style isn't like overly special. In fact, like as people ask me this, I have been more inclined to say that I'm trying to simplify more. Like the longer I do this, like there's so much information.
It takes like an hour or two per player if you really did it right. Like that's how I look at it.
And it's like one of those things where
Sorry. I was just gonna say that because I actually write some deep dive articles, and these players, like when I'm writing one player, that one article will take 5 to 7 hours between diving in, taking that information, trying to regurgitate it in a way that people understand it, trying to make sure I understand it, make sure I'm reading it right.
Yeah.
This is one player. Now, yeah, trying to do this for 150, 200 players isn't realistic.
And you know what I think helps too is like Mike's right now for Fantrax is doing a lot of, you know, rankings for each position.
30 deep every time, man.
Yeah, and I just released my top 100 pitchers, and with each pitcher, I put a little blurb on my thoughts on them. And even just doing that, I felt like I got to know each pitcher so much, and I have an opinion on 100 pitchers now.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's going to do, you know, dividends when it comes to draft day.
Yeah, and honestly, like, just forcing yourself to write a sentence about someone. Like, if you're just using an Excel workbook, just forcing yourself to write to articulate a sentence or opinion about this person and why, not even a whole full caption, like just one sentence or two sentences, like that's better than just keeping it in your head. Cause you're not going to remember on draft day too, like what your opinion is. Like I have made opinions about guys and then you come back and you're like, why was I even into this guy? And so like, it's at least good to have it documented. You're like, oh, I like them because of this. And you can like argue with yourself later about it.
Or the other reason, like, why was I so high on him?
Right.
Like, I've had that, like Devers. Like, I'm not going to go into that, but for some reason, like, I was down Devers just a tad, and now I'm looking at him again. And I'm like, why? And I wish, like you mentioned, I wish I had those notes. I wish I had that reasoning. What something about his something just made me turn off to him a little bit.
Right.
I can't find it now. But.
Exactly. So I think, like, when I'm evaluating someone, you know, there's so much information now, and I've reached a point where, you know, a lot of the kind of foundational sabermetric things that have come out, like just BABIP and home runs per fly ball and those things, like they you know, FIP, XFIP for pitchers, etc. They do a lot of good explaining on their own. Like, a lot of the new metrics and stuff that are coming out are only adding like a little bit more explanatory power to what we're trying to do. And not that that's not significant, but it's just like, when I look at a guy, I still look at, you know, I'll still look at his FIP and XFIP and Sierra. Like, that'll be the first things I look at. And like, I'll compare that to ERA and be like, is this guy a buy low kind of thing? And then I'll dig in farther. I like to look at their pitch mix and stuff, but I do it the same for hitters. Like, you know, a lot of the times the guys who are overperforming in ex-woba or underperforming or whatever are guys with like really high BABIPs or really low BABIPs or really high home run to fly ball rate or the opposite. And it's just like these kind of like old school tenets that we used to rely on, they kind of just are running parallel with a lot of this new stuff, just with not as much information and not as much, you know, so not as much explanatory power, but still, like, you're still getting to the same spot. It's just not quite as informed. So just kind of embracing that and like knowing that you can't look at everyone, to just, it's okay to like take the, to not, I don't want to call it a shortcut, but like, you know, it is okay to like use some of the old school stuff. If you're not like a Statcast guy, like you're not missing out on too much. It's good to know, but like a lot of my stuff so far in this preseason, in terms of getting familiar with people, has been looking at Sierra, K minus walks, FIP, XFIP, whatever for hitters, looking at BABIP. And I do look at XWOBA and stuff, but you know, looking at his other batted ball profile stuff too, soft contact rate, hard contact.
Yeah.
Rate.
I mean,
I'm just like everyone else, put my pants on one leg at a time.
Yeah. I don't know about you. I try to jump and put them on. I'm a special case though, man. But like, I do that. Like, that's what I'm saying. I still keep it very simple with pitchers, and it's worked out well. But then when I speak to someone like you or Mike, that just is more comfortable researching them, it makes me want to better myself. But my big things outside of the FIP, XFIP, Sierra, those are like you said, those are really the first three things I look at outside of ERA. And then I look at the K minus walk, just like you, kind of the same steps. My next step, I'm very big on looking at Arsenal, like, usage change throughout the season. Like, just like when Tyone started using that slider so much more the second half of 2018 type of thing. And I'm big on velocity change. Like, Clevinger dropped a mile per hour every month after returning from injury last year. Stuff like that is like really intriguing to me. So then I'll start looking at, well, let's see what happened during these months when the velocity dropped the mile per hour, and kind of see like, now was that drop due to him being fatigued because he just upped his velocity coming into the year, or was it him dialing it down so he doesn't re-injure himself? And that's the type of stuff you have to start thinking. That's why Clevinger is one of those guys where I still have ranked pretty high, but stuff like that creeps into my head as like little doubts, like little doubt pockets just pop up, like stuff like that. And then I have to start doing, then that's when I have to go into the deeper analysis, like each pitch breakdown and stuff like that. But I'm just,
it's a rabbit hole.
No, it's totally, you know, it's a totally real rabbit hole. And like, incidentally, like I just said that I keep it simple, but this preseason, I actually haven't written any pitcher captions yet. And I think I, you know, for all these guys that I'm doing deep dive pitcher captions on, I'm doing the same thing. Like, I'm going to be looking at Arsenal. I'm going to be seeing who added what pitches, who changed their usage, how pitch specific performance changed based on changing specs with the pitches. So like, if velocity increased or decreased, if the movement changed, if release point right. changed, you know, those kinds of things. And like, and that's still just guesswork, you know, like there, you can only interpret as much as you're seeing, and like, people will interpret it different ways, like without really knowing exactly how all of these things kind of like interact with one another. And like, being an all-knowing being, you just have to like make your best guess at like what the relationships are there. Like, maybe less velocity on a breaking pitch is better, you know, for like Corbin, who had like the second, his slower slider,
right?
Like, just kind of like elevating his game. Like, he had already the best slider in the game, but like elevating it by having like an even slower version of that. and just having those different velocity differentials. Like those are just kind of things that, and you guys already know this, but this, the various like random things that you have to look for that you, you can't necessarily like, there's no cookie cutter version of analyzing some guy's arsenal or pitch. Like they're always different. And I think that's the most difficult part is like, you can't just approach and be like, yeah, he's got a good slider or whatever. Like it's just never, it's never that easy. And they're always so different. So
real quick, I got to ask you about one player, Brandon Woodruff. What are your thoughts? Quick thoughts.
haven't done any Brandon Woodruff, but I'm going to, okay. So let's do it like in, you know, in real time. I'm going to pull him up on my pitch leaderboard.
Please. Because Woodruff.
So I will acknowledge that like I've heard a lot of talk about him this preseason, in this off season, and people seem excited about him. I have him on my list of guys that I need to evaluate. I'm going to tell you right now that I'm a little concerned.
I feel like he only has two pitchers. I feel like
he is instantly reminding me of, I have to look him up right now. He reminds me of Zach Wheeler, which like isn't a bad thing. In fact, it's like a pretty good comp, I would say. Obviously, Wheeler has like the splitter, and he doesn't have a changeup. I think like off the top of my head, but the thing with Wheeler is that like none of his pitches are like legitimate put away pitches. You know, like his best, I think like the best swinging strike rate on any of Zach Wheeler's pitches is like 12 or 13%. And looking at Woodruff's right now, like his changeup has 15%. His slider is 13%. Like that's not great.
It's not great,
but at the same time, he's got two 96 mile per hour fastballs,
right,
and they have good whiff rates. It's like a good whiff rate on a fastball is like a unicorn.
Yeah.
He actually like kind of has like a Lance Lynn thing going on, because like Lance Lynn has like not very good secondaries, but like dope fastball. But as far as fastballs go, like really underrated. Same with like, before he fell off the wagon, J.A. Happ was like a really good fastball guy. And then like this new ball, or maybe just old age, like kind of did him in. But anyway, I think like, you know, it's interesting. It's certainly interesting. I think being compared either to Wheeler or Lynn effectively puts you like in the SP40 range, if you're thinking like.
Well, I have them like SP20, so.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's
I
like
tried,
that's pretty
super. I tried telling him, Mike, he's way too aggressive on
well,
him.
Yeah, I think the thing is like the pitching is like actually it's really top heavy this year. Like I've looked at all the names and it's like there, you feel like you can get an ace through like the first 20, 25, 30 guys. And I don't think like Woodruff is interesting to me, but I don't think I probably could rattle off 30 names that I would take before Woodruff and feel comfortable about it. But like, this is the kind of thing that I want to do. Like Woodruff's on my list of guys, 'cause everyone's talking about him. And you know, off the top of my head, when I look at his profile and I think Lynn or Wheeler, those are guys who are going to be like in the mid to late 30s or early 40s. And hopefully his draft price will be around there. And it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, that's a guy that I might target at that point. And maybe hopefully like people haven't really done that much research on him and he falls even farther.
I mean,
he seems like an early hype guy.
His Statcast page is pretty though. It's all red.
Yeah.
It really is all red. I mean, and then he's the type of guy, you look at FIP, XFIP and Sierra. It's like, they kind of like some are a little higher, some are a little lower. His ERA fit right in the middle. I think there's upside. I think there's K potential because I think it was his O swing rate is he's still swinging. He had an above average swinging strike rate with while barely a league average or even potentially a slightly below average O swing rate. So I'm thinking if he can just get a few more chases, that K rate has way more chance of. And I don't know. I'm just a little optimistic. And on top of that, all he needs is one of those other pitches. I think he has a 5-pitch arsenal. If he just has one of those other pitches improve just the slightest, now he has a third solid pitch, you know what I mean, compared to those two. I know there's a lot of needs to happen here,
Mike.
Sure,
just,
but also
just
his,
move
like,
him
his foundation is his foundation is like strong enough though, like it's not like, you know, I don't have to squint to see it, let's put it that way. Like, there's guys where like someone will tell me like, yeah, if only he could develop like a lethal slider, and it's like, yeah, if only.
Yeah, right.
Bad. But like this guy, like I can see it, like I can see
I'm asking for a change up to be. Year. I'm asking for a change up to be league average. Like, I'm not asking for anything else. Like, give me a league average change up, and I think we see a step up in production. I understand I'm a little aggressive, but I believe DVR has him at like 15 overall. I'm not exaggerating. I think that's actually yeah, that's
crazy.
Which makes you think it's like, geez, it blew my mind when I heard that. I think that's the actual number he has, and I'm like, wow, I thought I was aggressive. You know, I think Pollock on one of his earlier rankings has him like 25, so it's not like I'm too far off. You know.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to have him this year if you guys are doing that kind of crazy shenanigans.
That's crazy.
You know, if, like, Derek and Paul are saying 20, 25 or whatever, there's no way I'm going to be able to get in a draft. Because he's only going to go up, probably.
I don't know about Sporer. I don't know about Sporer, but I do know about Pollock. Pollock is the one I saw.
Oh, Nick Pollock. I'm sorry, you said I heard Paul, but yeah, Pollock. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, if same thing. If Pollock's on him, too, then it's the helium's going to get out of control.
Yeah. The helium's out of control on Lamet. That's a whole nother discussion, though.
And he's also on my list. He and Woodruff. Yeah, I mean, I just basically made a checklist of guys that I need to look at.
Add Lizardo.
Crazy helium guys early on. I mean, yeah. I'm Lamet's interesting as I'm looking at him right now.
Literally a two-pitch pitcher.
Balls. Right. Yeah. There's like a I don't want to say there's a Blake Snell thing happening. I can say that there's a Blake Snell thing happening, but I can also say there's a Joe Musgrove thing happening too. Lamet doesn't have command, and like that's the biggest thing for me. But then again, like Snell didn't have command.
Snell didn't either, right?
But like Lamet really doesn't look like he has the capacity to like kind of develop command either. And I'm not gonna like, what was his walk rate?
I could just see him having great games and then games where he just gets blown up.
I'll see. What's going to bother you is he's going to, like, you're going to sit him while he's in Coors. He's going to pitch a gem. You're going to start him in San Diego. And he's going to get blown up. Like, he's going to be at home against the Rockies who suck on the road and still get blown up. Like,
right.
He's going to be that guy. You know?
I could totally see that.
But you know what? People love him, man. He's like, he's going top 35 in like a lot of people's rankings these days, man. I'm buying in a little
nervous.
Bit.
I mean, it's interesting. It's certainly interesting. I don't feel super comfortable about it. And I really like my bias. My personal bias is against guys who have really high walk rates. And he's a huge walk rate guy. But
and a
like,
home run guy too, I believe.
And a home run guy because he has such a low ground ball rate. But really like incorporating the curveball more this year, like that's obviously been a huge plus, but I think he overperformed. I think we're gonna get snake bit a little bit here, but at the same time, like, is there like a Robbie Ray thing here happening?
Which is okay.
I was saying Robbie Ray in my head.
That'll do. But I don't know if I'm gonna overpay for Robbie Ray, and I could just get Robbie Ray.
Can you settle one more argument before I gotta do this? Well, no, because we have this really big discussion and. Would you prefer to take a Kyle Hendricks or a Jesús Luzardo? In a vacuum.
Well, I guess that was not the argument.
No,
was the argument. We had an argument on it, but it wasn't within a vacuum.
What do you mean? I mean, you basically said.
I said if you take a risky pitcher before, like early on, I could see you settling for a Hendricks instead of a Luzardo. That was what I was saying.
I still don't think in any situation I want Hendricks over Luzardo.
Wow. I think the deeper the league gets, I want someone like Hendricks because he's so reliable.
It's like hard to ask that question.
Like in a 15-team league, like if Hendricks is my fourth pitcher in a 15-team league and Hendricks hasn't ever had an ERA above like 3.5 or something, or like 3.6, like that's the kind of ERA stability that you want in a league where like pitching is so desolate. But if there's like an overall prize, it's like National Fantasy Baseball Championship or whatever.
You're going to go for
running
upside,
for overall. Yeah. You might go for upside. I think he's not wrong. I think there's, I don't know which Mike said the thing, but like, I think there's, there's a basis for taking Luzardo depending on how risky the top two or three or whatever picks in your
it's definitely owner preference as well.
I just like to give him a hard time. I honestly had no issue with that answer. I just like to – I got him fired up last podcast talking about it. That's all. So I figured I'd add it in. All right, we'll let you get out of here. Just throw us a few names. A couple guys you're really into this draft season, a couple guys you're like a little bit out of so far. I know it's really early.
Yeah, it is pretty early. So like my picks to click hitter is Josh Rojas.
Rojas, yep.
who I've been hyping up since the middle of last year, and Urquidy, who's like kind of on everyone's radar now. He's my guy. Like if you're into Zach Gallen, like maybe, and you don't get Gallen, you know, take a wild card on Urquidy there. Yeah. Looking at some of the profiles I've written, you know, I'm becoming more and more convinced that like Keston Hira in the sixth or seventh round is going to out earn Javi Baez in the second or third round. And I think it's just because they're so similar in profile. And that was kind of like that whole diatribe I went on like, you know, half hour ago about those guys like pervading the league. So it's one of those like idle thoughts that I'm having is like, I'm probably going to pass on Baez like 100% this year and take quite a few shares of Hira if I need someone like that on my team. Who else struck me as like really interesting? I'll say this, and I hope Rob doesn't get mad at me, Rob Silver, because Rob Silver and I are like confidants in terms of like who we're eyeing in terms of pitchers. But Tony Gonsolin is really interesting to me. I still need to do kind of a deep dive on him, but like his whole arsenal is really intriguing, especially because he's like free in drafts right now and probably will end up in the rotation if the Dodgers are as fickle as they say they're going to be. Mm-hmm. And
so that would leave Dustin May out probably.
I don't know what's going to happen.
Or Ross Stripling.
You have so many pitchers there.
It happens every year and we're like, how are they going to get time? How are they going to get rotation turns? And it's like, it always happens, you know.
It works out. Yeah
Maeda will get hurt, Stripling will get hurt, everyone's gonna get hurt, everyone will have time. It's just like he may not start the year in the rotation, but I'm still, you know, I'm just racking my brain right now for the guys who are interesting to me. And
so
you know who I'm down on, who I thought I would be not down on, is Hunter Dozier. I think
interesting name.
Yeah, I guess it's not really the question you ask. It's the opposite of the question you ask. But it was a guy I was super into. Yeah, I was super into him last year. And, you know, I fabbed him hard. I got a bunch of shares. And I just kind of, like, let him sit in my lineup. And he produced for the rest of the year. But it didn't really ever occur to me that, like, the very early contact gains that he kind of experienced through May, they just completely evaporated.
I was gonna say he did slow down quite a bit towards the end, if I remember. But like you said, I traded for him in a dynasty league because I needed a first baseman and he was solid, and then I just kind of left him in there and I realized kind of just whatever towards the end. I remember that he was really very meh.
he was pretty average, and it's like one of those things where I'm not super convinced that what I saw at the beginning of the year was actually legit, you know.
Yeah.
And we're talking about recency bias, like maybe I'm plagued a little bit by that, but like the rest of his season, the last 4 months were just, you know, they were a spitting image of what he was before his like little mini breakup through May. So I thought I was going to be on him pretty big, like in the, you know, the mid 150s or, you know, the middle of the 100s round of tier of hitters, and I think I'm slowly kind of backing off of that. So that's one of the other things that you learn when you do the deep dive is like, I thought I didn't need to deep dive on him because I thought I was like gonna be super gung-ho on him, and I learned something new. So
yeah, man. Well, I think that's gonna do it. We appreciate you joining us, man. We really do. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been fun. Sorry I talk so much.
No, don't worry about it.
Like it always goes like way over.
No. It's great. We were, trust me, if you wanted to talk for 3 hours, we're not going to stop you. We are all, you don't understand. We love this stuff, man. We would probably break it up into two episodes, but we love this stuff.
I have one more question.
I mean, go for it. If he's cool, if you're cool with it, Alex.
That's fine. No worries.
I actually, I do buy the Black Book. So I just wanted to ask, what are they having you do this year for it?
Yeah, so this is my first year doing it, and I'm doing the second base profiles, which I just started. Like, I literally just wrote that Keston Hira one, like, yesterday. Gotcha. And then there's like a season long roto strategy chapter.
Ooh. Oh, nice.
So, okay. I don't want to spoil it. I would hate for Joe to be upset about that, but, it's not very general. I would say that it's like, you know, because it's a yearly book, like it's pretty specific to 2020.
Right.
So there's like a little bit of like a mock draft thing going on and me like thinking out loud about, you know, what draft pick I would want to be in the first round. Gotcha. Kind of thing. You know, there's a lot of conversation around that. So, That's cool. Was a lot of fun to write. I didn't know what it was going to be like, but it was pretty nifty. It's pretty illuminating, at least for me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, no, I mean, now I'm interested because I see Joe every so often chime into the group chat over at Fantrax, and like I just getting to know a lot of the people and a lot of the writers like a little bit more behind the scenes. It makes me want to read their work that much more because I just have this little more insight to it, and now I might actually buy it this year. You might have sold me.
Yeah, you should.
It seems very interesting, but the problem is, honestly, I'm not too proud to admit that I read other people's work. I do my own research and everything on that, but it's like I always feel weird, like, oh yeah, I'll read this, and then people think that I just take their opinions and like regurgitate them. That's not the case.
No, I don't think that's a weird thing at all. Like, I think it's weird for me, like, when I admit that I don't read enough. Like, I definitely find myself saying, like, yeah, like, I just don't have enough hours in the day for me to, like, read every article that I want to read. And I definitely, like, for someone being in this industry, like, in that regard, I'm not supportive enough because I don't read enough. So, like, it's two sides of the same coin. You know, like, I don't fear for a second that people think I'm stealing from them, or even that if people fear that they're stealing from me, like, that never really crosses my mind. And maybe I have, like, the comfort of having a name, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it does, maybe doesn't bother me that way. But, like, yeah, I think I don't know. I think it's probably not. I would tell you not to worry about it, but I obviously can't. Like,
yeah, no, I get it.
And I can't dictate your anxieties, but I would say don't worry about it. I mean, just from my perspective, definitely.
No, I definitely do my own work, and I usually don't worry too much about it. But then every so often, I'll realize like I point something out, and like I wrote, for instance, a Kyle Schwarber piece. I wrote a deep dive article on Schwarber because the second half splits really stood out to me, and I found all this awesome information just to find out a guy I've talked to like a month or two before I wrote his article on Schwarber, and it covered a lot of the same information. I was like, oh yeah, man, it looks somebody
yeah, pointed, just, it just great minds think alike, you know,
something like that. I mean, but it's just one of those things that just, you know, made me feel bad. Like I was like, dude, I never even saw this thing. I didn't know it existed, but it looked bad because there was just so much similar information. So
oh, it's fine. It's fine. And it's like it's bound to happen.
Yeah, because everybody has access to the same information for the most part.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's all about how you interpret it and put it out there. So yeah, I get it. But man, did it make me feel like crap. I wish I got mine out first type of thing.
Yeah. We all have those moments too. So I would say don't worry about it. I've definitely been like, I wrote something and it's like, oh no, like someone like maybe yesterday wrote the same thing and it looks like I just like
didn't copy and paste
anything. Yeah, yeah.
Copy and paste.
You know, it just happens. It happens. Yeah. You can't be everywhere at one time. So
yeah, I wish I read more. You guys, Mike, the other Mike here, I never read his articles, and it's become a running joke at this point. Bastard. But I really
good riddance.
I don't read any of his stuff.
Terrible, but, terrible co-host.
Yeah, that's why you're off the show. Anyway, in all seriousness, I think that's a good place to end it. Alex, thank you again for joining us. Remind everybody though, where you us unless wait, Mike, are you good with questions?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Remind everybody your Twitter handle, because I know I can't say it, and all that, and again all the stuff you're working on and all that good stuff. Go ahead and pimp your stuff out, man. It's all good.
Yeah. I write at Rotographs. My Twitter handle is Dolph Haldhagen. I'm writing in the Black Book. And yeah, that's all that's going on with me right now. So you can find me normally on Rotographs like once a week. That's it. that's it. And that's then Matt tweets on Twitter all the time.
But hey, you're always on podcasts. I mean, we hear your name out there pretty often. So man, again, thank you for joining us, and I hope to have you on again sometime. Maybe
it'd be a pleasure.
Closer to draft season, get your takes on some players.
Sure, by all means.
This is more of a getting to know you thing. Well, yeah, you can. We'll let you head out, and me and Mike will wrap it up, I guess.
All right. Sounds thanks, good, guys. Man.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, and that was Alex Chamberlain, and man, that was actually pretty awesome. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it was great.
I hope you guys found it as interesting as we did, getting to know him a little bit and just hearing his process. And it was nice to speak to somebody who speaks as much as I do. This was kind of cool. Like, no, it was like, but the difference is
the least amount of time you've ever talked on a podcast.
For sure. But I told myself I had to be quiet, let him talk. Yeah. And I stammered through a little bit of it, not going to lie. And I told you I need to work on that because I tend to want to speak before my mind's ahead of my mouth. So I tend to try to catch up to it. Anyway, we're going to call it a night. We appreciate you guys listening. Again, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mike_Kurland. The other Mike is at SP Streamer. We have articles coming out all day, every day, it feels like. I mean, I just released one on Fantrax, my second base preview. I'm working on my third base one already. You just released your top 100. Do you have anything else? You have anything else coming out?
Yeah, I got a piece on Sierra, 2019 Sierras, and what I think it indicates for pitchers going forward into 2020 season. And I'm also going to be working on a deep dive on Maeda.
Oh, and I forgot to mention that if you want to see some of Mike's work, he recently, if you don't already know, got picked up by Fantasy Benefits or FWFB. I'm not sure. They go by at Fantasy Benefits. So he'll be putting out some work over there. Justin Mason put out
his tweet. Actually doing their pitcher rankings and draft strategy for their for their strategy guide for 2020.
For the draft guide.
Draft guide, yes. For 2020. Gotcha.
Yeah. And yeah, and I'm about to kick it into high gear. Apparently, I am going to be writing for Fantrax's draft guide. So, dude, it's big. It's bigger and better things in the future for us. We're just keeping busy, but we're not going to bore you with any more stuff. We got it. You get it. We're busy. We have a lot of stuff going on. We appreciate your support. And please, guys, if you have any questions, hit us up on Twitter. But as always, again, I can't stress enough how much we appreciate your support, and we will talk to you soon.